Thank you very much for all coming to this poetry reading, and thank you many of you for taking part in what's an absolutely lovely booklet. And I'll say now that so many people have come up to us and just said, this is fabulous, want to buy it, and they're really excited by it. So thanks very much for coming along. Right, so what we're going to do, we've got 10 poetry readings by yourselves. In case anyone doesn't know me, I'm Laura King. I'm a historian of fatherhood and family life, and I've met a lot of you here. But we ran two poetry workshops with Matt Nunn of Nine Arches Press. Fantastic workshops which produced 18 poems, as you can see in our booklet, and displayed in the tent next door. And I think all that I need to do is hand over to Ben Wakeling, who's our first poet. So Ben's a father of two young boys, and he's got a daughter on the way in August. Grew up in Nuneaton before moving to Rugby, and now lives in Kenilworth. And he's written two books on fatherhood that I'd highly recommend, very funny. So do check those out if you can. And he's got another book coming out in October for the charity Sands. And I'll hand over to Ben to tell you a bit about his poem and read it for you.
Hi everyone, if you can still hear me. I've written a book, poem, called Welcome to Fatherhood. It's a very light-hearted look at my life before and after having kids. So let's go. Welcome to Fatherhood. Before I was a dad, people warned that it would change me. They said that I would be a different person with a baby. But I just shrugged them off and carried on drinking my beer. Fatherhood won't change me, I thought, with a little sneer. But everyone was right. When I became a dad, I started thinking differently, thought I was going mad. I began to get emotional, telling myself this wasn't true, as I changed a dirty nappy, fingers knuckle deep in poo. I used to go out clubbing, spend my evenings in the pub, but now the only place I go is the local father's club. I used to chat about football and knock back vodka triples. Now all I seem to talk about are babies and crack nipples. Sorry to lower the tone. There was a time I'd go to showrooms and stare at supercars. Now I spend my time in mothercare looking at nursing bras. And now I get excited when I see a shiny tractor, and everybody laughs when I start crying at X Factor. But mostly what has happened is I've become overprotective. I guess that being a dad has given my life a new perspective. And whilst my former life of freedom seems to be gone for good, a new one's just beginning. Welcome to fatherhood.
Thanks, Ben. So next up is Anthony N. Britt, who has four children. Chris is 22, David is 19, Matthew is 13, and Eleanor is 11. And Anthony suspects that Chris, the prototype, was at 15 kidnapped by aliens and replaced by a dangerous alien from the planet Moody, in his words. Anthony now spends a lot of time looking after his son David, who's heavily autistic. Anthony also spends his time writing novels, short stories and poetry, and has won competitions previously. And he's a member of the Warsaw Writers Circle.
When my eldest came along, my main worry was, how the hell am I going to learn to do this? Who's going to teach me? And I couldn't even operate the video recorder. But 22 years later, I still can't operate a video recorder, but I know a little bit about bringing up children, and it's mostly due to successful parenting, chapter one, the child that was in my hands. The rule book, prototype, template for those yet to come. Trial, maybe, mostly error, my firstborn son. Hoping to get it right by the third or fourth, but for now, you need my guidance, and I need you as my guidebook. We'll help one another. Learning, getting it wrong, trying all the same, writing the instructions for parenthood. Thank you.
So next up we've got Glyn Essex, who grew up in Leicester in the 40s and 50s and suggests he might still be growing up. And he's got three children, Kate, who was born in 1970, Helen, who was born in 1973, and Will, born in 1979. And he's retired now and has two grandchildren, and reflects that perhaps he's a better grandfather than a father, which might be it's easier the second time round. But I'll hand over to Glyn for his poem.
This is a very short poem, and it's something I could well have written back in 1979 when we were awaiting the birth of, as it turned out, our only son. My only excuse for this is that it was a long time ago. Message to my unborn son. I won't weigh you down with expectations, my son. So if you turn out to be not interested in cricket, unlikely, I know, but possible, I suppose, so be it. No problem. We'll find you another sport to take up. Thank you.
Thank you. I love that one. Very short, but beautifully simple and gets to the point, doesn't it? Fantastic. So next we've got Jamie McEwen, who's 37, Coventry born and bred. And he has two young children, a daughter who's 3.5 and a son who's 18 months old. And this is the first poem I think he's written, which is fantastic. So over to Jamie.
This is my first poem, and the idea came from when I did the creative writing workshop at Warwick University. It was a picture of Only Fools and Horses, Labour Ward. So I remember when I was at the birth of my first child. My son was born 5 weeks early by emergency caesarean, so I'll combine the two, and this is my poem. It's called Labour Day. 5 weeks to go, a very tired mother-to-be. So an early night was had by all. 1:45 a.m, a nudge in the ribs, a scream of pain. Hun, it's time, water's broke. Get the bag, the baby's coming. So the father-to-be rushing around, flapping like a chicken, trying to get all ready and his missus to the hospital and to stay calm. 17 hours later, in the labour ward, a dad, very bored, a scream of pain, a shout of push. Out pops a head and two blue eyes, then a cry. Well done, a beautiful baby girl. Then a midwife asks the dad to cut the cord. First he says no, too scared. Okay, snip, wow.
So next we've got Gerard Sharpling, who was born in Northampton, grew up in a bilingual German-English household, and he currently works at the English Language Teaching Centre at the University of Warwick, in the Centre for the Applied Linguistics. And he lives in Birmingham with his family and has two children, James, aged 11, and Lucy, aged 5. And he spends his spare time playing the piano and violin and spending time with his family. So, over to Gerard.
Lovely, thank you. I'm an adoptive father of two children. So when I saw this Athena poster that I'm going to read about in a moment, I thought, well, I didn't have this experience with my own children since I adopted them. But it doesn't stop us from imagining or, in a sense, kind of dreaming what that experience might be like. And that was the stimulus for the poem I'm just going to read to you now, called Athena Poster, 1987. If I had known you then like the man on the Athena poster, my eyes, enticed by your vulnerable gaze, those barely moving, inquisitive eyes would have flitted imperceptibly a synergistic moment of harmony, attachment felt through sense of smell and touch. Yet this, a free and simple pleasure, was never to be ours. Instead, me speculating on the touch of your baby hands on mine, and you reaching out with tiny hands to an empty, gaping space. I learnt of your touch from shreds of paper, medical reports, and fragments from your past life tossed about in a battered cardboard box. This touch was constructed on paper, its potential gentleness filtered through harsh wood pulp, that non-existent moment in our lives. But still I have you now, a handsome boy of 10.
Thank you, Gerard. And I must say, it's so wonderful to have that experience of adoption as well as people's experience of birth, that kind of meeting your child through a very different means. So it's wonderful to include that in the book. So next up, we've got Robert McMillan. He was brought up in Johnson Renfrewshire, and has one son aged 19 months over there, I believe, Taron John McMillan. And he works as a clinical ophthalmic photographer in Birmingham. So I'll hand over to Robert.
Hi there. Yeah, I wrote this for Taryn, so later on in years he can read of it. And it tells about how I met his mum, and about my past as well. So here goes. He has always been here with me, always standing with me. You can see that from that tent with a kilt on. Taryn in his black watch kilt, meaning the hunting. I can't wait to tell him the first time I met his mum. A pretty red dragon who met the white unicorn. I stopped at Paddy's because I was tired of walking all the time. Two mythical creatures brought together under a shamrock by poor providence, or was it serendipity? From Celtic blood, he came to cram over toys and furniture. Taryn, I say, get down off the chair. It's too high. He smells, he climbs higher. I rush over and get him. He laughs and giggles, my hat and my mouth. His hair is the same as my hair. When I was that age, we compared it. His Caledonian granny bringing his first haircut out, putting my haircut against his wee head, a perfect match. He has a granny Scotland, a nan of Wales, a bampy France, a great granny England, a granddad Thailand, and it could be true a true Brit if he desires. He could be a Welsh, English or Scottish, and not forgetting his great granddad from County Sligo. But I just prefer him to be Taryn, my son. I take him out in his pram and get angry at the cars parked in the pavement. We plan to have them removed, Taryn, eh? Who do these idiots think they are? I may tell him about pea company and when my lungs were not big enough to suck in the air, about the zigzag navigation exercise over some mountains in 30 degree heat, under an azure sky adding salt to a water, about the maroon fighting machine and the twinkle in the eye. Oh, I take him to high places with bergens and lunch and lemonade. But he's always been there with me, in the Starlifter, in the Black Hawk, not forgetting Fat Albert, even the back of a van in bandit country, trying to stay away near Cross. It's time for his bath now. I have to go. He needs a story or two, and a cuddle before bedtime. And he needs a wee brother or a sister, ma'am.
I think Mam's here, but we won't ask her to comment on that a little bit. Right, thank you. That was lovely. So next up, we've got Scott Redding, who lives in Elsdon here in Coventry with his wife, Stephanie, since 2004. And his daughter, Verity, was born in November 2010. And Verity's actually eligible to claim three different passports, British, Irish and Canadian. So some different cultures there. And she loves football, eating cheese and watching YouTube videos about owls. So we'll hand over to Scott now for our next poem.
Well, thanks very much for Laura for organising this. And thanks, Matt, for facilitating the workshop at work originally. How to be a father to my daughter. All I have for my father's father, a birth certificate and passport. The hands of my father, covered in silver, turned to black after a plant shutdown. How to be a father to my daughter. Shopping in Leicester for a pushchair and basket, shopping for things, not preparing, because we have plenty of time, we thought. How to be a father to my daughter, when I have no sisters. Wanting her to be caring, confident, playful, happy, to look like me and not me, to start teaching her things, the next step. How to be a father to my daughter, her living on after I die, and wanting her to trust me more than anyone else.
Thank you. So next up, we've got Oliver Jack, who grew up in Harpenden in Hertfordshire, but is now settled in Warwick. And he's divorced but has two children in a shared custody residency arrangement, and they are Clara, aged 8, and Isaac, aged 6, both of whom are here, I think. And he's enjoyed dabbling with poetry before, and he's currently reading them lots of A.A. Milne, and they both have their favourites, but Oliver's is The King's Breakfast, which is nice to know. Okay, thank you, Oliver.
I wasn't sure where to begin with writing a poem about fatherhood. So I thought just use something from my own experience, and it kind of just evolved, and it evolved into just trying to help or just give advice to dads, basically. For the answers on how to be a dad, think back to when you were a lad. You needed love and security and to feel you were part of a family. You wanted the freedom to crawl and explore, to look beyond the open door. You wanted to know where you shouldn't go, and you didn't, but you did want to hear that no. You wanted to be chased and turned upside down, to be sat on big shoulders and spun around, to be helped to the top of a climbing frame, to get stuck and be taken down again. You wanted to be driven in a car to this and that, near and far. Sometimes, if you were lucky, in the front seat, and sometimes at night just to get you to sleep. So if everyone's sure on what to do, if you're tired and maybe anxious too, just think as a child and remember when, your worries now weren't your worries then. If you try to be the perfect dad, you'll fail and drive your children mad. Just do your best, go figure it out, and here are some tips for what it's about. It's putting them right if when they've done wrong, but standing up for them if they've been wronged. It's knowing the time to chastise and be tough, but also to play and comfort and hug. All equally born of loving care, trying to do right, trying to be fair. It's showing the principles for which you will fight, yet acknowledging the fact you are not always right. It's checking or doing their projects and homework, or checking, redoing their help with the housework. In short, it's a duty in both good times and bad to be there for them, to hear them say, Dad. Don't simply perform those duties paternal, but be brave and open to man's maternal. Muddle through one way or another, but accept there are some things best done by their mother. You too have needs, so take care of yourself, find time to relax and look after your health. Don't lose touch with those modern trends and keep in touch with your closest friends. At the end of the day, still be your own man. Whatever you do, you can only do what you can. Your children aren't you and you aren't they. And one day, with your blessing, they must find their own way.
Thank you, Oliver. All good advice, I think. So next we've got Steve McGarvey, who's married to Nick and a father of three beautiful boys, Finley, Caleb and Rory. And he's a youth, we've got them scattered about, I think. And he's a youth and community worker and a member of Dads Aloud, who we've been working with and have been a fantastic support for the project. And his ambition is to get involved in work that supports fathers become a big part of the solution rather than the problem, which is a great thing to be involved in. So I'll hand over to Steve for our next poem.
Hi, everyone. I've just been very inspired hearing all these dads coming out with poems, and I'm part of the Dads Aloud group down in Warwick. We've got Abby here, who's the Children's Centre Manager and been a great support, so good to see her here. I just wanted to share this poem with you. I wrote it really because my sons, three of them now, I've got a little baby one down there in the pram, have all been a big inspiration to me and changed my life, so just want to share this with you. It's called The Heart of a Father. Where is the heart of a father? Deeper than the ocean bed, on the front line of the battlefield, taking on a wall of fear. What is the sound of the heart of a father? Restless like a hungry drumbeat, an unquenchable fire searching for the key to a locked treasure chest buried in the murky sea. Who knows the heart of a father? Only those prepared to journey, to stretch beyond the vistas of the unknown, and find the gold of immortal conquests. What choice has the heart of a father? To breathe life or to suffocate? To find peace or chaos in the storm of life? To lead or shrink back? To create or destroy? A father's heart may sometimes tire, skip a beat or step out of time. But this father's heart will not loosen grip on hope. So strong is the call of destiny.
Thank you, another wonderful poem there, and they've all been fantastic. And our final poem is actually going to come from Matt Nunn himself, who kindly contributed to the collection but also ran these two workshops. So he's going to both say a little bit about those workshops and what we wanted to get out of them, and also read the final poem today. Thanks, Matt.
Okay, I just want to say a few words about the workshop, and first of all to thank you all for taking part. It was an incredible... You would count with some incredible poems. When I was sitting there reading them as they came into me, I couldn't believe how good they all were. I mean, I just said these were sort of, some of them were professional standards. It was unbelievable, considering you just sort of sat there, especially the ones on the Saturday morning at the Children's Centre, you probably might not have even known we were going to come, possibly. And you just sat there and wrote, just whilst your kids running around. And you went home and worked on them. It was absolutely fantastic to see. And it was just a great expression of dads just expressing themselves. And I felt that you all were desperate to talk about being a dad. And that you all managed to do that wonderfully well. And they're forevermore in this book. So first of all, I want to say thank you to you all and give you all a big round of applause, first of all. So we were looking for an expression of being a father. And we got it, basically. And we succeeded, and it is a wonderful book. So first of all, I'd like to thank Laura for helping us in that, or starting it off. And also the Children's Centre and anybody else who I've forgotten to thank. It's a wonderful project. And I hope you all, if you don't all carry on being poets, I'm sure you all carry on being good dads. And that's the main thing. So I'm going to close the poetry reading by reading my poem. And it's about becoming a dad. You know, the fear that you have when you are sort of thinking about it. When you sort of find out your partner's pregnant, it's kind of in the abstract. But when you're sitting there watching the child being born, it suddenly becomes very, very real. And even 4.5 years later, since my son was born, I still can't believe I'm actually someone's dad. It seems strange, really, when he calls me dad or daddy now. And I still can't quite believe it. And it's about becoming, really. It's about becoming a dad. And also the fact that he was born on the 5th of January at 4:45. And it was a day even worse than this. I was looking out the window, holding him when he was about 15 minutes old, and this wonderful shining light across this very dour Birmingham landscape. So it's about that as well. Being a poet, I had to put a bit of misery in, obviously. It's called Becoming. In between the growing days and midwife shift change, petrified of who and what I have just become, and unable to quite get that I am some kid's old man, I'll still give it a go and proudly, precariously aloft you, shining your vibrant big promise to vividly contrast the damp window framing our beloved bleak inheritance of dawn awakening, heavily smudged by eternal sleep, like it does, I have to tell you, every bleeding day, over the municipality of awkward shadows. Even though, of course, you cannot even gurgle yet, I know in the natural touch you use to speak to me only that you are already calling me dad, whilst I, feeling your pull gradually, happily, am learning to call you son. Thank you.